Inside the Clubhouse decides who should stay and who should go in Major League Baseball on 670 The Score.
Should I stay or should I go now?
And with that from The Clash, we come into hour two here on Inside the Clubhouse. Bruce Levine, Mike Esposito in for David Haw today. And Bruce, should he stay or should he go? One of our favorite features here heading into the trade deadline. I think we know on the White Sox that you're probably not going to see anybody going, but who might be coming to the team? But the Cubs have a bit of a decision on their hands, don't they?
Yeah, they do. 13 players, free agents as of November. We talked about the idea that Jed Hoyer's in that middle area of, does he add to this team to try to win? Does he start trading off some of these free agents, would-be free agents, to make that team on the north side a contender in 22, 23, 24, 25? That's the tough one right here. But my proposal right now is a trade that would help both the White Sox and the Cubs, and that would be the hottest hitter on the Chicago Cubs, Jock Peterson, going to the Chicago White Sox.
Now, that is an interesting one, Bruce, because we know, we certainly know that the interest had been reported by you and on several occasions when he was with the Dodgers, that Jock Peterson was a guy that the White Sox liked.
Well, not only that, they talked to him in the offseason before he signed with the Cubs. And there were two offseasons in a row where the White Sox almost traded for Jock Peterson from the Los Angeles Dodgers. Peterson right now, 7 homers in his last 13 games. You saw the 2 bombs that he hit last night. The exit velo were the hardest hit of his career at 112 and 113. This is a guy that the White Sox would be looking for right now, Mike, because of the idea the outfield has just gone through tremendous trauma. You look at the White Sox from the end of spring training losing Jimenez, and May 1st losing Luis Robert for what is going to be at least most of the season. Hopefully they get them back toward the end of August or September to help in a pennant push. But they're gone. Now you had Adam Engel, who was hurt in spring training. Hopefully we're going to catch up with him in about 20 minutes and talk to him as well. He was gone until a few weeks ago, and he's being slowly incorporated back in with the team. And now you have Adam Adam Eaton going on the IL. So their entire starting outfield and all 4 of them lost to the team. The White Sox are in need of outfield pop in the worst way. They've had some nice contributions from guys like Hamilton stepping in, Goodwin now stepping in, Lamb doing some nice things. But they need consistent pop. They need a consistent outfielder, and no one would be probably a better fit for them right now than the bat of Jock Peterson. I know Cub fans are driving off the road going, well, where does that leave us? He's our leadoff man. He's our hottest hitter. Why would you start taking apart the team? I'm not saying the Cubs have to take apart this team to continue to be good and get better. The White Sox have young pitching in Lambert and Stever who would help the Chicago Cubs this year and beyond. We know the Cubs need starting pitching. They need starting pitching looking toward the future. They also could look at Jake Berger, the third baseman, who was the number one pick by the White Sox. It's starting to come around now after being injured for 3 years in a row. There are matchups here, Mike, and although it is a scenario that I'm suggesting, that you and I are talking about, there's a lot that makes sense about this trade.
Yeah, and we've talked about this on a number of occasions over the years. This is going to be an offseason for the Cubs. Regardless of what happens in the season, on your starting pitching, you have Kyle Hendricks and you have Alzolay, and outside of that, You're going to have a bunch of new faces. Kimbrel's a free agent. You know, the bullpen will turn over as it always does. And all those big boppers that you've mentioned, we've mentioned, become free agents. And Jock Peterson is one of those. He's on a one-year deal. And if the Cubs were not contending, he would absolutely be guaranteed almost to be traded based on the contract and based on what he could bring to a contending team like the White Sox. So that one's intriguing, Bruce. I definitely see that. But that's where the million-dollar question comes in, right, is what do the Cubs look like at the end of July? Are they still atop the National League Central? It's a four-horse race right now in the division, with Pittsburgh being the only team that's not in it. Cubs, Brewers, Reds, Cardinals all bunched together. It's going to be a fascinating trade deadline, I think, on the north side. And certainly on the south side, the White Sox, you know, are going to be in contention and are the heavy favorites in the Central. But what do they do to fortify?
I think the question that Hoyer has to ask himself, and you know, look, the fans are number one. You have to, when you're looking at the team and you're trying to satisfy the owner and yourself as a top executive like Hoyer does on a daily basis, he has to satisfy what the ideals of the owner and the ideals of the franchise is going forward. But you can never forget about the fans and their wants and needs. And if you throw up something that's similar to what the White Sox had back in the late 90s when they had the white flag trade,
right,
that brought them, you know, Bob Howry and Keith Falk in a trade that, yep, was tremendously unpopular at the time. You know, yep, trading, you know, Wilson Alvarez and Danny Darwin and
Roberto Hernandez, correct.
So they went and helped the Giants win a division, get to the playoffs, not a World Series. But from the perspective of the trade for the White Sox, it set them up with two of their top young pitchers for the next 5 or 6 years. So these trades are essential to be made by teams. It was a very tough call for the White Sox at that time, but they felt they weren't catching the Indians. They were, I think, 3.5 games behind the Indians at that time that the white flag trade was made. And the White Sox fans were up in arms. A year or two later, they were pretty pleased with what they had.
Right. Well, and I remember that was the first year I had started covering baseball in Chicago. And I remember, and I believe the quote from Jerry Reinsdorf was something to the extent of, we didn't think it was possible that they could win the division. That was the powerhouse Indians team of the late 90s, the Jim Thome, Albert Bell, all of the, you know, the Alomar. That Indians team was leading the division, and it did. He got roasted around Chicago.
That was 1997,
right.
And the Indians came within and one out of winning the World Series that year. So Jerry was right about that. And I guess the upsetting thing for Cub fans is this is a fun team to watch because they weren't expected necessarily to be at the top of the division. There are similarities of fight in this David Ross team of the Chicago Cubs in 1989 with the Boys of Zimmer and an unexpected team that fought their way to a division title and the NLCS losing to the Giants that year. That was one of the more fun summers ever, right, Mike, for Cubs
for
fans?
Sure. Absolutely. And you know what? They're going to get Nico Hoerner back here pretty soon. They have been, you know, relatively healthy in terms of guys. You know, their main guys like Baez and Bryant and Riz have played. Rizzo with some of that back issues flaring, but Alzolay will be coming back here shortly. The bullpen has been fantastic. So this is a team, and the division is not that strong, Bruce. I mean, the Central is not, you know, it's not the days when, you know, the Cardinals would run away and hide every year and, you know, everybody else would be chasing in. I mean, this is a division that's going to be very competitive. The Reds started out the season scoring a ton of runs. They've come back down to earth. And the Cubs, as you mentioned, maybe not expected to be there. But there they are. They're 8 games above 500, and they're a game ahead of the Brewers in the division right now.
Yeah, and you know, it's a team that people can get excited about. Look, we have fans back in the stands for the first time in over a year. They're happy to just see baseball. But now, on both sides of town, we're watching first place baseball. So,
right.
To talk about uprooting some of that for the future is always disturbing for fans. But I think they understand the dynamic of this type of conversation, and it's going to be more and more on our show every Saturday until the trading deadline, and you're going to hear it on The Score all the way through until July 31st when the Cubs and Sox finish off adding. Remember, Mike, after July 31st, with the new rules that were put in place over a year ago, there's no more adding guys on waiver trades. Those things are gone. So yep. you were able to add waiver deals with other teams and make trades back before 2019. You can no longer do that. So when you add or subtract, it's permanent now, starting on July 31st. You got two more months ahead of you to deal with the fact that you're not going to be able to add anything except what's in your organization.
And what about guys, Bruce, when we're talking about the Cubs, guys like Matt Duffy, who's hurt but should be back, Bodie, who's hurt and should be back, Patrick Wisdom, who's off to a great start here as a Cub, but, you know, he's a guy who's been around. You're not sure that he's any part of anything long-term. Mariznick, you know, a lot of these guys are not necessarily, in my mind, long-term pieces. And you could certainly probably, I shouldn't say certainly, you could probably get something of value if you decided to move some of these guys.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, if there's a total fire sale on the north side, I don't think people should be shocked. I think today, as we're sitting here and the Cubs are one game in front in the National League Central, I think people would be shocked if Jed Hoyer started to make those moves today. But, you know, with 40 days left before the trade deadline, you know his scouts are out there looking at other teams. You know sure. that he is still contemplating adding pitching, which is number one for the Cubs. Pitching that could help them win this year. Pitching that could help, more importantly, next year and the year after. I think that has been a related goal of Jed Hoyer's from spring training on, the fact that, you know, pitching, controllable pitching is what the Cubs are seeking. So you could kill two birds at the same time. You could trade away guys that have helped you win to this point, but you could also bring in guys that you can control for the next 2 or 3 years that can continue to help you win in 2021.
Yep, it is a delicate balancing act, but really, you know, if the let's say the Cubs rip off a, you know, 20 wins in the next 30 game streak, well, I can't believe there would be any selling at that point. And we're talking about possible trading that the Cubs might do to trade guys out. But if something like that were to happen, Bruce, and it is certainly possible, we've seen them play well enough to do that, that totally reverses it. And I don't know that they become huge buyers just based on what are you trading to try to get guys. But do you think if that happens in that scenario, the Cubs then are in go-for-it mode, despite the fact that all these guys are going to be free agents next year?
Just doesn't make a lot of sense, Mike. I mean, it does from the fan point of view. Myself, as a baseball fan, I'm saying, yeah, add a couple pitchers, even if they're 1 year, you know, 2 month, 3 month buy-ins, try to win the division. But, Mike, if you're Hoyer, you're sitting around with your group, you're sitting around with Crane Kenny, you're sitting around with Tom Ricketts, and they say, Jed, is this, if you make those two additions, is this a World Series team? What is the answer, Mike? I mean, that is, I think ultimately, that's what you have to ask yourself. You do owe the fans a great show. You do owe them a chance to win this year. But your major goal is that you're doing your job for now and the future as well. Fans don't want to hear about the business end of it,
right?
Because they see a team that has a chance to win now. But the reality of the situation is there for Hoyer on a daily basis.
Yeah, Cub fans are already mad with us on the text line, Bruce. I'm sure you are not surprised by that at all. But Certainly the White Sox fans, and let's talk about the Sox for a second.
Are there any four-letter words describing my idea?
No, actually, there are some people that the trading of Jock Peterson has not been unpopular, but the basically waving the white flag in total has been very unpopular here at 312-644-6767. We also have Sox fans, though, tweeting in and texting in, I should say, about possible options for the White Sox. And you might imagine a lot of people want outfielders. So here's one, and it's a familiar name, Nick Castellanos, who was on the Cubs briefly, now is tearing it up for the Reds. But this is a similar situation to what we're talking about with the Cubs. A, are the Reds going to be sellers, considering they're two or three games out of first place in a winnable division? And if Castellanos is available, he certainly fills a huge need for the White Sox in that outfield, but it's going to take a ton. He's going to be, if available, one of the hottest names out there, if not the hottest.
And it fills the need for the outfield right now, okay?
Right.
Does
Correct.
It fill it when Robert and Jimenez
no.
come back? I mean, well, it might. I think he signed originally last year a four-year contract somewhere around $70 million, $80 million, something like that. So from all of that, you know, does a player like that fit for you now? Now, with the White Sox, it's win right now mode, 100%. Mm-hmm. And Rick Hahn has been on record as saying, look, we think we can win a World Series now, this year, next year, or the year after. So that type of trade could be made. How many of your young players do you have to give up to get a Castellanos to help you try to win in 2021? That's the question.
And the contract, Bruce, was 4 for $64 with opt-out clauses after, well, last season's already passed, but after this season too. So he can opt out after this season, and it was a 4 and $64. So quick math is that, what, $16 million a year? So not outrageous in baseball salary terms for a guy hitting great, but you mentioned it, and I think that's the key for the White Sox. And the news, and I'm reading tea leaves here, I certainly don't know any of this. The Sox seem to be cautiously optimistic, at least on Eloy Jimenez. And I know Robert, I mean, they're not saying anything in specific, right? But I think the hope is maybe that they can start making their way back by the end of August or something in that range.
Yeah, that, you know, right now that's pie in the sky. You hope
right.
you get them back, but you have to get to September and you have to have a lead. You have to be winning at that point. You have to be in position to be a World Series team. You can't count on Robert. You can't count on Jimenez. Madrigal's out for the whole season. So that if you're Rick Hahn and Kenny Williams, you ignore that situation. That is
right.
That is nothing you can count on as a part of your team in 2021.
Bruce, before we take a break, let's quickly jump out to a caller. Howard is calling from the north side. He is now on Inside the Clubhouse. Hey, Howard, good morning.
Good morning. I think it's foolish to trade Baez or Bryant. First of all, those are rental free agents. You're not going to get any major prospects. Anyways, the Cubs are the second richest team in the National League, third in MLB. And you're saying if the Cubs can't afford those free agents, who else is going to afford those free agents?
Well, Howard,
okay,
we
Howard,
appreciate
thank you. Look, good points that he brings up. I'm not saying that the Cubs necessarily have to trade their big guys. I'm not saying that they will. I'm not saying that they can't afford to bring them back. I'm not saying that Hoyer won't consider
right.
making those offers. It takes two to tango, Mike. These guys are only a few months away from being free agents. They are going to test the marketplace out there. There will be 29 other teams that will have a chance to talk to these guys after the season. So as far as, you know, your perspective about, well, what are you going to get for them? I don't think that's the point right now. The point right now is what do you expect from your team this year? How do those guys impact it? And what is your team going to look like going forward?
Right.
Very tough decisions for Jed Hoyer. Not easy work ahead of him.
Not easy work at all. And you're right. We in no point in our 15 minutes that we've been talking about trading did we mention Baez, Bryant, or Rizzo. We'll see what happens with those guys. I don't expect them to be traded in huge decisions coming there. But the Cubs certainly making it interesting with their play on the field. And when we come back, Bruce, we'll take a quick timeout. Adam Engel of the White Sox will join us from Houston. We will talk to him at around 10:30. And we're pleased to talk to you every Saturday morning here on Inside the Clubhouse. It's Bruce Levine, Mike Esposito in for David Haugh this week here on 670 The Score. And we are back on Inside the Clubhouse here on 670 The Score. Bruce Levine, Mike Esposito in for David Haugh this week. Glad you are with us. We're here till 11. And we hope to talk to White Sox outfielder Adam Engel in a few moments here. Friendly programming reminder here on The Score, Bruce. Cubs pregame at 12:45 this afternoon with Zach Zaidman. Jake Arrieta against the Marlins at Wrigley, and the White Sox with Lance Lynn on the bump tonight down in Houston. And actually, Bruce, it is now time to head on out to the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book.
Chicago White Sox outfielder Adam Engel, nice enough to join us on a Saturday morning on Inside the Clubhouse. Mike and Bruce Levine here, Mike Esposito, Bruce Levine, along with you today. And Adam, welcome. Thanks for joining us, taking some time out this morning.
Hi, Bruce. Hi, Mike. How you guys doing today?
We're
good,
doing
thanks.
A tough loss yesterday. You guys have really... You guys have been really battle tested here over the last couple of weeks with playing a series against Toronto, against Tampa over the last week, and now against Houston. What do you learn about yourselves as a team and individually when you're playing these tougher teams, Adam?
Yeah, I think as you're playing some of these teams, you get a good taste of kind of what playoff baseball is like. Obviously we got there last year for a series, but it's good to play these teams and kind of see how they're going to play us in the playoffs, or just kind of what playoff pitching looks like. And it just feels like, especially last night here in Houston, just with the crowd being as loud as it was definitely playoff atmosphere. So it's good to see that during the season. And obviously our goal is to make a run in the playoffs, so we're excited to keep playing these really good teams and get a little taste of that.
Adam, I know coming off of the injury, Tony and the White Sox kind of trying to ease you back into things, but how are you feeling? And in terms of playing time, do you feel you're up to playing every day? Is this something where you're still working your way back?
Yeah, no, I'm feeling really good. The staff here is being cautious, just making sure that, they monitor my workload. They got all kinds of cool tools to make sure that, guys are, when they have a heavy night, that, they get an off day coming up or whatever the case may be. And just the plan coming back for me has been just to make sure that on a day-to-day basis they're checking in and, just trying to work my legs back up into, playing shape. I didn't get, a whole lot of time to do that after I came back from the IL. So I'm feeling really good. So I'm thinking, here pretty soon that I'll be able to be, restriction free as far as what games I can and can't play in. And I'm excited for that. And hopefully I'll be out there a little bit more often soon.
Adam Engel joining us for a few more minutes on Inside the Clubhouse. Mike Esposito sitting in for David Haugh. Bruce Levine with you every week, 52 weeks out of the year, talking baseball. Adam, when you look at baseball right now, we passed that 60-game mark from last year, now moving toward halfway in the season. What's the talk about with the group and among the guys about playing a full season? What comes up that is different this year, knowing that people have to play 162 again and really haven't had to for two seasons?
Yeah, I think it's different for the younger guys. There's quite a bit of the team that Last year was their, you know, first year of playing. So it's definitely different for them as far as, you know, playing 162. Even when you play in the minor leagues, you only play like 140. So you got an extra month up here. So it's just a longer season and, you know, just making sure you stay on top of recovery and making sure you bounce back, you know, night to night. Obviously, there's a little less of a push, I would say. I think last year it was like from game one until game 60, everybody's pushing. Everybody's, you know, from a pitching standpoint, it seemed like the velocity was up. And from a position a position player standpoint, it was like, you know, guys aren't getting days off and everybody's playing, you know, as often as they can. So it's a little bit less of a sprint this year. And you can kind of see that, but I mean, rightfully so, 162 is a lot of games. So it's just a different kind of play style, I would say, as far as, you know, guys are making sure they can play the full season and then even into the playoffs. And then just making sure those younger guys got that routine as far as, you know, what they got to do to get ready for, you know, a longer stretch of games.
Well, and Adam, it's strange for me to say this because in my brain, I don't feel like you're one of the longest tenured guys in the team, but this is your fifth season with the Sox, which puts you there. You've been on the team longer than most of the guys in that clubhouse. And obviously the dynamics have changed to where you guys are now favorites in the division as opposed to, you know, five seasons ago when you guys were in a rebuilding mode. How have things changed, you know, atmosphere-wise and I guess for you personally in the clubhouse? You got a new skipper there, lots of expectations. How have things been for you last season and more so into this season?
Yeah, I think the attitude has shifted to, you know, let's win now. Like, let's win tonight. Like, we're all kind of pulling in that same direction. That expectation, just from a player standpoint, is we want to go out there and win every single game. And it's real. It feels realistic, right? Every single game that we play, we feel like we're going to go out there and win. So obviously, we're not going to go 162-0. We've already blown that, you know. But that's what the feel is, and that's kind of the expectation, is we're going to go out there and win tonight. And you know, that's always been something that we've wanted to do, even 5 years ago, but there's more of like that feeling in the clubhouse, like, okay, we're going to win tonight. You know, every single night we go out, it doesn't really matter who we're playing, who's pitching, you know, we're going to find a way to beat the other team. And that's kind of the expectation. So that's, for me, I feel like that's the biggest thing. Like, you can, it's like palpable in the clubhouse. Like, guys want to win right now. So
Adam, what is the La Russa experience like? We have seen from the beginning when Tony was hired till now, even on a daily basis, him telling us it's his job to fit in with the players, even though he manages you guys. He fills out the lineup card. He is there to talk to teach, to listen to. What has that dynamic been like for you personally, and in general, how do you think this has gone?
I think it's been great. Tony is, it's funny, I was actually on the phone with one of my friends and telling him, like, Tony's just, you know, he's been around, and it seems like nothing, you know, every situation that we're coming up against and just game situations, it's like he's managed it multiple times, you know, on different teams or in different clubs or in different seasons. So he's got plenty of experience in every situation, and you know, he's trying to put his players in the best situation as he can, and just kind of let the chips fall where they may. And you know, it's been leading to a lot of wins, obviously, which is, you know, as players, it's really all we can ask for out of our managers. You know, put us in the best situation and let us do the rest. And we're going to try and come through. So that's what the feel's been like this year. You know, it seems like, you know, I remember a game that I got pinch hit for, you know, later on in the game, and Eaton came up with a big RBI single, and, you know, I'm on the bench. Obviously, nobody wants to come out of the game, but, you know, you're sitting there, and it's like, man, that move paid off. You know, not that I couldn't have gotten a hit there or I wouldn't have gotten a hit there, but he, you know, he made a move where a guy came in the game and did his job, and we were better off because of it. And it just feels like, you know, that seems to be what happens over and over again. So, you know, guys love that. Guys, obviously, we love winning, and that's what we're doing a lot of right now. So things have been great.
Adam, last thing for me, and I'm curious because you were obviously hurt earlier this season, and a lot of the outfield was hurt, and all of a sudden a guy who's never played outfield, Andrew Vaughn, is out there trying to play left field. So did you help him at all? Did you try to help him at all in terms of learning how to play the position, or maybe you know, talking to him on the bench? I mean, that had to be pretty interesting and also fun to see a guy kind of thrown out there and really doing well at it.
Yeah. Unfortunately, early on, like with a hamstring injury, there's not a whole lot I could do from a, you know, show him how to do stuff standpoint.
Sure.
But, you know, anytime he had questions, you know, I was there, you know, definitely had conversations with him about playing outfield. But Andrew's, he's a really good athlete. I'm sure you guys have noticed that. But,
yeah.
You know, even just coming here to Houston, for instance, there's a really weird wall in left. There's all kinds of divots. It's part of its metal, so the ball can kick and shoot wherever. But he's an athlete out there, and he's a really intelligent kid as we're kind of game planning what we want to do with the wall. You know, Andrew's coming up with that game plan just as much as I am. So you can tell he's a really smart kid. You know, when you do teach him something, it feels like you only got to say it once, and he picks it up pretty quickly. And, you know, it looks like he's getting more and more comfortable out there. I think that's kind of the biggest thing. If there's anything that I can do to help him be more comfortable, that's kind of what I'm looking for. Because I know confidence plays once the game starts and things start speeding up, you know, you want guys to be comfortable. So, that's been my role. I feel like I've been trying to just help him, you know, any way I can in the little things. And he picked up the fundamentals super quick, and it seems like he's picking up everything really quick out there. So for being a corner infield guy, he's doing a great job.
Adam, Mike and I really appreciate you joining us today. All the best of luck. Looking forward to you being able to play every day and contribute the way that you want to. Thanks again for joining us on Inside the Clubhouse.
Thank you guys so much for having me on.
All right, Adam. Thank you. Adam Engel of the Chicago White Sox on Inside the Clubhouse. Mike, he's a really, really smart ball player, and his game has come along a long way from the offensive point.
Yep.
These days, lineups, other teams' managers and pitchers cannot ignore Adam Engel. He's a dangerous hitter.
Yep. Yeah, last year, and I pulled it up, and, you know, this is one of those, it's like, man, how has he been here for 5 years? But he's been here for 5 years on the South Side, on the White Sox. And last year, albeit in a shortened season, an OPS of 811 up to 921 in OPS this year in only nine games, obviously. He's just getting started after his injury. But you're right, Bruce, this is a guy that was, you know, primarily known for his defense early on, and he's certainly hitting a lot better, and I expect that he will be in the lineup tonight. Again, it's a 6:15 first pitch Chicago time down in Houston. Valdez for the Astros, Lance Lynn for the White Sox. So we'll be checking out the first-place White Sox in that one tonight. And coming up on the score at 12:45, Zach's pregame, Cubs and Marlins. It's Jake Arrieta on the bump tonight, this afternoon, I should say, at 1:20 for the first pitch there. We need to take a timeout, Bruce. We will dive back in to our trade talks and potential trade talks. We also haven't touched on yet the substance stuff on the ball for the pitchers and all that debate, that lots of talk about that this week. So we will do both of those things when we return. He's Bruce Levine. I'm Mike Esposito, in for David Haugh this week. This is Inside the Clubhouse here on 670 The Score. Last segment here for us on Inside the Clubhouse. Bruce Levine, Mike Esposito, in for David Haugh today. Glad you've joined us for some great baseball discussion, as we have here every Saturday morning from 9 until 11. And Bruce, lots of discussion this week. We've been talking about All-Star selections, but also a lot about about pitching and what gets put on the baseball. And I know you were involved in a lot of those discussions earlier this week on the South Side.
So when I was growing up back in the dark ages, there was a product that they had for men's hair. It was called Greasy Kid Stuff. It was actually the name of the product.
Okay.
And that is exactly where baseball is right now with what will the pitchers be allowed to do. Starting on Tuesday, I believe, Monday or Tuesday, the 21st, whatever day that is.
That's Monday, yep.
Major League Baseball will start to enforce no more product of being used on the baseball. Very common that pitchers have been using the combination of rosin and sunscreen. Others have been using more significant things to be able to get a grip on a baseball and change the flight, as well as the dimension of the baseball coming into the batter. So these are things, Mike, that are being discussed right now. And a lot of the pitchers in particular, we haven't heard much from hitters, but mm-hmm. a lot of the pitchers in particular have had a different take on how this is going to impact baseball.
Yeah, no, and I know, yeah, we have heard some things out of the Tampa clubhouse when the Rays were here. I know Tyler Glasnow basically said, how could you tell us we can't do something when we've been doing it the whole season? And, you know, kind of blamed his injury on there. And I believe we have a comment here that Adam Studzinski, our producer, is going to play from White Sox pitcher Lance Lynn.
You see it coming. Guys have taken it too far. And, you know, you kind of – you're not surprised by it, really. Hopefully that we make sure that we clean it up. Everybody's doing what they can to be, you know, the best they can within the rules. And, you know, you just worry about certain things, you know, with guys with certain umpires that don't get along. Maybe those umpires could be using stuff against them. Or, you know, nowadays, you know, guys use rosin and then they feel like, oh, well, they're using something else and they're not. So it's going to be hard for the umpires. You know, you hope that we can keep it to where it's basic rules and all that. There's going to be a lot of decisions put on umpires that are going to put them in a bad spot, and it's going to be tough. So hopefully we can get righted where everybody's doing what they need to do in the right manner, where we don't have to sit here and check people and, you know, play sticky police or whatever they're going to call the umpires these days. So, you know, I'm glad that it's going to get cleaned up. I'm going to see how everybody goes about it, especially, you know, some of the ways that they're going to check and stuff like that, because this could get interesting and a little weird for a lot of people.
That's Lance Lynn on with Parkins and Spiegel earlier this week, Bruce. And that's exactly what I'm wondering is, like, how are you going to, you know, so the umpires are going to be the substance police, essentially. And I understand that, you know, when it's flagrant, you'll notice it, right? And or you would think they would notice it. But I don't know. How exactly do you enforce this? I mean, this is going to be a tough one.
It really will. I was talking to an umpire supervisor up in the press box yesterday about this, and he said that this is a difficult task for the umpires, something that they're not necessarily trained for. Yeah, they've ejected players over the years in their experience for doctoring baseballs when it's obvious, but looking for these substances on uniforms and hats and gloves and catcher's equipment, there's going to be a lot of strangeness about that. I will tell you this, Mike. No matter how they police it, no matter what they find, no matter how they think they're going to control it, pitchers will continue to try to use things to help themselves be better. They don't call it cheating. They call it getting a little bit of an edge to be able to be better at their trade. You and I can call it cheating. Hitters can call it cheating, just like pitchers will call corking bats and using pine tar too far up the barrel, cheating for a hitter. So this has been going on for 145 years, and regardless of what they find or what they change, it's not going to change people trying to get an edge.
No, that's for sure. I actually read a nice piece, I believe it was on CBS Sports yesterday, about the history of doctoring baseballs. If you want to learn of all the various ways that pitchers have doctored the baseballs over the years, and as you said, going back hundreds and 140-something years at this point, pretty interesting. And as you said, this is not going to stop just because they now have a rule against it.
Yeah, they're going to have to test catchers, too, because a lot of it comes from catchers. Mike, we have people to thank today, including Adam Eaton of the Chicago White Sox, Willie Harris of the Chicago Cubs, nice enough to join us as guests today. Adam Staszynski, a terrific job as our producer every single week. Mike, it's been a pleasure having you on, as David Hall will be back filling that role next week. People can follow me on Twitter at MLB Bruce Levine, and on our website, writing Cubs and White Sox on our site every day at 670thescore.com.
Bruce, it's been great hosting with you again, and I'm sure hopefully to do it again whenever David needs the time off. I am at Espo670 on Twitter. Cubs baseball at 12:45 with our pregame with Zach Zaidman, Jake Arrieta pitching against the Marlins today. But coming up next, you're going to want to stick around for the musings of our buddy Mark Rohde. He will take you up till Cubs baseball next here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.